The Bill Simmons Podcast is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. We are also brought to you by the Ringer Podcast Network. I put up a new Rewatchables Monday. We did Jeremiah Johnson for Robert Redford month. Monday, another Redford movie. A little more modern this time around. Sneakers. People love this movie. This is, I think, probably the most requested Redford movie ever since we said we were doing Redford month. So that's going to be on Monday. And it's going to be three people, including myself, who have never done a podcast together. So there's your hint for that. But you have a whole weekend to watch Sneakers. Speaking of the Ringer Podcast Network, we're launching a new podcast called Welcome to None of My Business. It is with Sophia Benoit and Kelsey June Jensen. And this is the first time we have gone into the kind of sex life advice area. We'll see how it goes. I actually think this has a high upside for our pod, but we will see. As always, podcasts are about chemistry in the host, not the idea. And this is a good idea. And we think the chemistry in the host are going to be good. So check that one out. I think it's launching either this weekend or early next week, but you can subscribe, follow on Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. So there you go. I wanted to say one thing about Bill Belichick, because I've been watching people just delightedly pile on him. Look, I'm biased. He was my favorite football coach. We won six Super Bowls with him, had two plus decades with him, and two of those decades were fantastic. But I keep seeing, I don't know how this North Carolina thing's going to go. Obviously, it's not going well. It's probably even going worse than we thought. And will he be coaching there next year? If I had to bet my life one way or the other, I would bet that he will not be coaching there next year. And I would bet that it's probably headed toward an Urban Meyer, Jacksonville. This was a bad idea. Let's just get out of this. Maybe NFL coaches shouldn't coach college. Maybe college coaches shouldn't coach NFL. I don't know the answer. I do know Belichick's in his mid-70s. And more importantly, I do know this. Nothing that happens to him at North Carolina, short of him pulling his pants down and tweaking on fentanyl on the sidelines during an ACC game, is going to change everything he did when he was at the Patriots and all the stuff he did in the NFL. It doesn't really matter. And what is annoying to me about all of this, we always talk about legacy in sports now. I'm not saying I'm innocent. I've certainly brought it up a few times, but it's legacy, legacy, legacy. What is this going to mean for his legacy? We don't even understand how to talk about legacy. We don't know what a legacy is, because think about some of the great players, coaches we've had over, you know, the last 100 plus years of professional sports. Did it matter how the end happened for a lot of them? Do you care that Babe Ruth played for the Boston Braves? Do you care that Vince Lombardi coached the Washington Redskins? Do you care that Michael Jordan played for the Washington Wizards for 2 years, didn't make the playoffs either year? Can you name all the teams Wayne Gretzky played for in hockey after the Oilers and after the Kings? Because you can keep going. It was like the Rangers and the Blues and a couple others. This happens over and over again. Can you name all the people Muhammad Ali fought after the third Frazier fight? When, you know, I can name them because I was there watching most of them. He was my first favorite fighter. But do you even remember after Larry Holmes, the most depressing fight in the history of boxing, that he fought again? That he fought in the Bahamas against Trevor Burbick? And it was even more depressing? None of this shit. Hey, once the years pass, people remember the best stuff. They don't remember like Peyton Manning in that last year with the Broncos when he had the noodle arm. They remember all the great stuff he did on the Colts and the Broncos. And this is just how sports goes. This is, nobody remembers the last couple years when Kobe was on the Lakers and they didn't win anything and the team was a complete train wreck. It doesn't matter. So when I hear about like, is this going to hurt Belichick's legacy? Look, it's not awesome. I'm not doing backflips about it as somebody who likes Belichick and was hoping he would do well. But ultimately, it's not going to change what happened in the 2000s and the 2010s. It doesn't change what we thought about Belichick and Brady together as a tandem. You know, that's another stupid take I've seen. Well, since he's doing badly at North Carolina, that maybe we have to reassess Brady's involvement in the Super Bowls. No, we don't. We don't have to reassess anything. We have to reassess nothing. The first three Super Bowls, Belichick was probably a little more responsible. The second three, Brady was probably a little more responsible, but they needed each other the whole time. Brady's talked about this over and over again, how much he learned from Belichick, how much Belichick coached him, taught him about defenses, worked through tape with him the first couple of years. They needed each other. And to say one deserved more credit than the other is just typical sports media talk bullshit that we do. They both won all those titles together. I don't feel like either of them was that much more important than the other. They needed each other, and that was that. And even in the last three, when Brady clearly was the dominant force in football and the biggest reason they won those Super Bowls, there's no question. But what happened in the last Super Bowl they won? Perfect defensive plan, game plan that completely cut Sean McVay's legs out. Brady, I think the Pats scored 13 points in that game, something like that. Belichick won that Super Bowl. Brady won the game before against the Chiefs when they kept scoring, when it became a shootout and they had to get points. That's the thing. They needed each other. And I don't care what happened in North Carolina. I really don't. If he's going to leave, he's going to go back to media. Look, this was the whole thing with the Jordan Hudson story this spring and why I thought I didn't like the story. I didn't want to listen to it, read it, because I just feel like the dude's in his mid-70s now. He's clearly past his prime. And sadly, sometimes this is how it ends for people in sports. We've seen it over and over again, and he's the latest. And guess what? There's going to be more after him. So whether he finishes North Carolina or not, whether he finishes the season, maybe he'll miraculously turn around next year. I thought he was going to do way better than this. There's a lot that goes into college sports with the recruiting, with what you promise people. How do you build a program? Coming right into that, just trying to, you know, obviously way harder than anyone expected, even him. But ultimately, he's going to leave. The years are going to pass and nobody's going to care about this. Nobody. Allen Iverson's doing a media tour right now. Allen Iverson won 6 playoff series in his entire career. Nobody cares anymore. People remember 2001. They remember how much fun it was to watch him. He's certainly one of the best players I've ever seen in person. We don't talk about what's up with Allen Iverson's legacy. He only made the finals once. He only had one playoff run. Doesn't matter. He was one of the greats. Belichick's the greatest NFL coach ever. I don't care what happened in North Carolina. So anyway, that's my rant. Coming up on this podcast, we're going to talk to Kurt Goldsberry about the 3 Texas NBA teams. And then he's going to tell us one trend that we should look for the NBA season. Then after that, Joe House and I with the ice cold Ringer 107 picks, just a comedy of errors. We're bringing in some, it's like a marriage. We're sprucing it up. We're bringing in a threesome partner. Chris Vernon is going to come on and try to change our luck. So that's all next. We're going to take a break, then Pearl Jam, and then Kurt Goldsberry. This is the Bill Simmons Podcast presented by FanDuel. If you're betting on the NFL, come on. FanDuel is the place to do it. They've got everything. Same game parlays, quick bets for when you want to jump in live. Your way, so you can set your own lines on just about anything. The app's fast. It's easy to use. And best of all, when you win, you get paid instantly. I've been in Boston, Massachusetts recently. Guess what I did? Use FanDuel. Super fun. Download the FanDuel app or go to FanDuel.com/BS to get started. Must be 21 plus, present in select states, 18 plus in D.C., Kentucky, and Wyoming. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit rg-help.com. Call 888-789-777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. Kurt Goldsberry here, taping this mid-afternoon Pacific time on a Thursday. First of all, haven't seen you in a while. Good to see you. You're wearing the Grantland hoodie. I'm excited to see that. I'm excited to talk Texas teams with you. That was the first assignment we had. You were in the Texas Triangle. Some are calling you the King of Texas.
Yeah.
This is the first time, Kurt Goldsberry, that all 3 Texas teams have a chance to be genuinely good. Since when? What year do you think was the last year?
Oh, man.
Yeah, not that was long hard.
2018?
Nope. 2015.
Okay, 2015.
Yeah, it's been 10 years. 2015, Houston was 56-26 with that Howard-Harden combo when they beat the Clippers, made the Western Finals. San Antonio was 55-27. Then Dallas, kind of their last decent year with aging Dirk, they were 50-32. But really, to get all 3 of these teams together as contenders has not happened. I don't think ever. We've always had 2 and 3. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year. But I ask you, do you share my enthusiasm for the Texas Triangle this year? Because to share it, you must believe Dallas is going to be way better than the over-under odds and all that stuff.
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, those three franchises we have here in Texas are pretty proud franchises. I know it's been a while since all three have been good, but all three have won titles. One of the things I appreciated, Bill, when I worked at the Spurs is these are real rivalries too. Like the Houston-San Antonio rivalry was much bigger than I sort of expected as an outsider, but I'm also pretty high on all three teams. I think there's some commonalities, dude. I think the biggest one is they all have a very, very exciting young player at the heart of the story right now. Yeah. Amen Thompson, no disrespect, is the lowest on that one, but he's very exciting according to the GM survey that came out this week.
I wanted to ask you about that later.
He's the most likely player to have a breakout season, so they're very excited about him, and rightfully so. But then you have Wemby and Cooper Flagg here in Texas as well. So I think it just sets the stage, not only for this season, but for the rest of the 2020s, Bill, for these Texas teams to be pretty optimistic.
Yeah, you'd put Wemby at the top of the chart because I think he has the chance to have the generational superstar tag at some point. Then I think you would put Flagg second, who is the best American player that I think we've had come into the league, probably since AD. And then what's interesting, you said Thompson's third. I would argue for a Thompson-Şengün combo.
That's right.
To be at the same thing because, you know, Şengün's only 23. The Eurobasket, everything he did there got people more excited for him. I don't know. I'm on the fence with how much more I think you can get out of this because I think he's going to always be a little bit of a defensive liability. But like he's been a 19-9, 20-10 guy. I don't know what the ceiling is because if you just study the basketball reference and the jump, right, that guys make as they hit their mid-20s, it would tell you that 24-12 is realistic for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. What do you think?
I'm very high on him. I think they played great defense last year with him at the center position. I think they were top five defense when it was all said and done. I think Ime Udoka is always going to emphasize defense. That's another person that we should mention. I think Houston might have the best coach of these three teams and one of the best coaches in the league. What he's been able to do there over the last couple of years is completely change the culture and define a vibe that is very important in Houston. I would say if I'm a bit of a Şengün defensive skeptic, but the numbers last year suggest we shouldn't be. I mean, they played top five defense. Steven Adams is another character to watch there. I think wherever he goes, there's great rebounds. If he has anything left, he'll give him a nice physical piece to put in that front court too. And then obviously Kevin Durant showing up changes the vibe there as well. Right.
Yeah, I wrote down this triangle that we have now in Texas where you have Wemby, you have Castle and Harper on top of Amen Thompson as these three young impact guys that I all feel like the ceiling is really high. I had somebody in my life claiming that Castle was going to be the leap guy this year, not Thompson. And just being like, why does Castle not get mentioned in any of this stuff? The guy had a really good rookie year. He was awesome at UConn. We've seen year two jumps before. And yet he's like just being buried behind Wemby and Fox and Harper and people aren't kind of talking about him as a leap guy. I thought that was it. We could talk about him in a second. Şengün, this would be the leap year for him if he has it. I think either this year, maybe next year. KD, one of the 21st century's five best guys, going for one last ride, trying to find happiness yet again. He's like one of those Hollywood actresses that just keeps... It's like when Elizabeth Taylor got married 8 times when I was a kid. Flagg, we mentioned. AD and Kyrie, we did not mention. Two guys still trying to win a title without LeBron. And then Fox finally getting a spotlight. And then here's the other piece that we can talk about later, but I'd argue these are three of the four Giannis trade destinations.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think that's right. I think that's fair to say. And I think...
These three in New York, right? This is it. These are our four because in Dallas, like if Milwaukee wants to stay good, AD has to be in the deal.
Yep.
San Antonio, I think, is the one that makes the most sense on paper. And then Houston, we had always talked about as a Giannis spot.
Yeah, they all have either future assets or great young talent that would be attractive for a rebuild in Milwaukee. So I think that's fair to say. They're just stacked. And I think you mentioned it. I mean, I don't even know where you want to start, but there are three also huge questions. They all share a big question coming into this season at the point guard position. You didn't even mention it.
I agree. They share the same.
Yeah. at the most important position, arguably, in the sport, which is the point guard. Obviously, Houston had a pretty bad injury to Fred VanVleet before the season. That's, you know, making us ask, is Reed Sheppard ready to do this, or can Amen Thompson do this? I think people aren't even talking about the loss of Jalen Green, who I don't think either you or me thought was a great offensive weapon. But he led the team in pick and roll plays last year. Fred VanVleet was second. And so now that both of those quarterbacks are gone, you have Reed Sheppard, Amen Thompson, Kevin Durant can run pick and roll, but that's a big question. Then San Antonio.
Wait, De'Aaron can we stop? Can we hold that Houston thing for a second?
Yeah.
My fear with them, I'm really glad you brought up those pick and roll stats. My fear with them is that this is not going to be a fun team to watch, even though they have all of these players that I really like, because of how kind of stagnant in my head they might be offensively, where it's like, oh, we're going to dump it down to Şengün on this play. Here's the dump it to KD play. Here's the awkward spread the floor for Thompson play. But they don't have that connective guy. And I do think KD has it in him because we saw him do it in Brooklyn. And in Phoenix, he was just being used so weird. We went to that game in February last year. It's like, see their rim protector? What's going on with this? So if maybe he's more of a connector, you don't think Şengün has any, I mean, everybody always jokes about Baby Joker, but can you run an actual offense through him that people will be moving around and cutting?
Yeah, could he be mini Joker, at least a more mini Jokic-ish than he has been in the past? I think he is a great passer for his position. I think that's one of the options they have to sort of fill those VanVleet touches to try to run the offense through him. But yeah, there's a clear core there of offensive weapons with Amen Thompson now, Kevin Durant, and then Şengün. And I think there is going to be enough offense. I was just looking at my notes. They were 12th in offense in the league last year, but they lose both of their quarterbacks, essentially, with Jalen Green and Fred VanVleet going away. Dylan Brooks, who's a vibe, if nothing else, also has to be mentioned as
like
a big departure.
So
there's a big sort of uncertainty. I don't know what they're going to be looking like to watch. I think they'll be better than last year. If you're just looking for beautiful offense, simply because they have Kevin Durant, who is incredible talent to watch. They didn't have somebody like that last year. I'm pretty bullish on them, Bill Simmons. If the big question about the 37-year-old dude staying healthy is a yes. And I think that's the biggest question other than the Reed Sheppard one. I think those are the two big questions I would put in Houston. Is KD still going to be KD and healthy? And is Reed Sheppard going to be up to a promotion? And what did you say about Reed Sheppard the other day?
A friend of mine texted me. He was like watching a rich kid in an AAU tournament. It was the scout report that made me nervous.
That's brutal.
But we had our college dudes really liked him. So
The draft nerds loved him. When that draft happened, every nerd in the NBA who does a draft model and looks at this stuff pretty deeply was like, Reed Sheppard's, he's going to be very, very good at basketball. Ime Udoka obviously didn't trust him. I think he had 4 DNPs in the Golden State series. He's forced into a position I don't think he's ready for.
Well, that's when we all suffer from next season amnesia, where especially happens in the NFL, where you just forget what happened last year. They were so bad offensively in some of that Golden State stretches.
Right.
And now they don't have VanVleet, who I was never a giant fan of, but I worry about the choppiness. All right. So that's our question for them. San Antonio, I interrupted you. You were about to say, let me guess, the shooting around Wemby, all these guys, none of them are knockdown shooters. What is that actually going to look like with all these guards?
I think shooting is one, but I'll paraphrase the sports guy himself with the biggest question there for me is De'Aaron Fox. Are we sure he's good? Because they just went all in on this guy. And I'm not sure it's going to work. I'm not saying it won't work. I'm just saying the biggest question there is De'Aaron Fox, finally the piece that's going to bring a healthy offense to San Antonio, because Victor Wembanyama is immediately going to make that team a very good defense starting this year. Last year when he was on the court, Bill, they had the third best defense in the NBA according to the defensive rating when he was on the floor. When he was off the floor, they went to 28th. The problem is going to be on offense, And anybody who's watched Wemby play knows that that's a huge growth area for him as an individual. He could really use a veteran point guard. Chris Paul was big there last year, but De'Aaron Fox could be bigger. He's younger and faster. So the big question for me, eager to hear what you say, Bill, can De'Aaron Fox really fix that offense?
I mean, he was good on that 48-win Sacramento team. And right. He was like a clutch scorer, which they would clearly need. And I do like the idea of him running pick and rolls with Wemby and then Wemby rolling to the basket. That, by the way,
right.
Congrats to the Spurs for finally admitting he's 7'5".
Oh, that's right.
It's just little baby steps until everybody finally admits he's 7'6", which is what he actually is. But at least we're going with 7'5" now. Kareem always lied. Bill Walton always lied. Durant is another height liar. These height liars know who they are. Kevin Durant's at least 7'1". Like, what does he say he is? Like 6'10"?
It's interesting. The height liars, they bookend each other because they're short guys who say they're an inch or two taller than they are.
Right.
And then
Iverson. Iverson's like 5'10". Oh. Chris Paul's like 5'10".
Yeah.
The height liars. This would be a good all-star team.
Yeah. So I think AOC called out Sean Miller for being a height liar this week, but I don't think we want to go there. So let's keep with the shooting. De'Aaron Fox, one thing he doesn't have, which would be very convenient if he did, was three-point shooting. Yeah. So you brought this up. I think the other big question there is there enough shooting talent around Victor on the perimeter? And Julian Champagne is great, but he's a bench player. So really it comes down to Castle, who could be a good shooter. He's definitely not there yet. Devin Vassell, who's okay. Harrison Barnes is a great knockdown shooter. But in a world where you have some younger off-ball players who aren't great shooters, your point guard really should be. And De'Aaron Fox has never been a very good three-point shooter. So I think it's fair to say the biggest question mark overall on the offense is De'Aaron Fox and three-point shooting. What did they rank last year in offense? I had it here in my notes. I think they were 19th in offense. They need to be better than that to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and Wemby missed, what, the last 2.5 months?
Yeah, again, that happened, I think, when you were in town in Austin. He missed, those were the first games he missed in February. Yeah. And so, he didn't play February, March, and April.
FanDuel has an unbelievable prop for Wemby, by the way.
Tell me.
Will Wemby average 25 points, 12 plus rebounds, 4 plus assists, and lead the league in blocks this season? Which are four things that sound realistic to me.
And yeah, I hate to judge the preseason.
12, yeah. 4, plus 750. It's year 3. Plus 750 are the odds for that. I was trying to think which one would I'd be the most worried about. And I think it's the 12 plus rebounds.
Yeah, because that's fair, so far, but there's nobody else on the team that rebounds. And that's another weakness, is if Harrison Barnes is your 4, there's a lot of rebounds to be collected. And
I genuinely think Cornette's going to play real minutes for this team. Cornette's good. Like, so, he's not a starter, but if he's like your 7th man and he's playing 20 to 25, they just didn't have anyone like that last year. And they can play him with Wemby, which I think they know. That's why they overpaid for him.
How do you tell Spurs fans what to expect with the Luke Cornette experience?
He's just, every once in a while, he looks like he's like the 23rd best player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to know that you don't know when it's coming. It could be any game. You'll watch him on the right night and you'll be like, this guy should be making $30 yeah. million dollars a year. What a steal that we have him. And then there'll be another game where you didn't realize he played. I loved him though. I thought he was such a good bench guy, and the Celts are obviously going to really miss him. But the Spurs were smart. They used their cap space proactively. I don't know why they didn't get Yabusele. I keep mentioning that, but another fun prop for Wemby, by the way, is will he average more blocks than assists next season?
Well, that's
so blocks would be like 5.
I would say 4 or 5 blocks. And if you're watching these Spurs preseason games against one Chinese team in the Miami Heat last night, you're going to notice that Victor is making a lot more passes, and they're part of that is every point guard on the roster is missing the preseason, or at least the first part of the preseason. So they're running offense through him. But when he gets 2 sent at him, he makes the right play. He is a sort of typical European big man in that sense. So I think he can get to 5 or 6 assists, but we might be seeing a little bit of a red herring in the preseason. I have these two stats from the GM survey about Wemby that I think should get Spurs fans excited. Well, if you were starting a franchise today and could sign any NBA player in the NBA, who would it be? Victor Wembanyama received 83% of the votes from the GMs.
By the way, who are the 17% that had another pick?
Well, Jokic got at least one.
Jokic is 30.
And then SGA got three or four. So again, that is a huge sign. Maybe not this year. Maybe we're 2 years away from being 2 years away, but that's a great sign that people around the league who build basketball teams are pointing at the guy in San Antonio and being like, that's the best guy to start a team with.
Wemby to record a quadruple-double this season, which I'm not sure has ever happened. 18-1.
I think Wemby to record.
Wemby to do a 5-by-5 in any game this year, which means at least 5 points in the five categories. That's plus 340. I feel like he's going to do that in like November. I would bet all these Wemby things. The question for me is how many games is he going to play? Forget the stats. Like, can we just keep him on the floor? Can we keep him on the floor for 70 games? That's what they're over under, which we're going to cover in more detail next week on this pod, but 44.5, which I thought was right. That's like right around the right number. We forgot they have Olynyk too now.
I know. A bunch of former Celtics stretchy bigs in the Spurs ecosystem.
All right. So what was your big Dallas question other than the obvious of when the hell is Kyrie coming back?
Well, I can't wait to talk to you about Cooper Flagg.
Yeah.
The one question that has been the number one question for any Anthony Davis team over the last 15 years since you and I have known each other is what? Can this guy stay right? I mean, if he's right, if he's healthy, they're going to be good.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of a boring one. So let's lean into the second one, which is Cooper Flagg going to be great right away?
Let's fucking go. I'm so ready for this. I'm so ready.
Yeah.
Let's take a break and then come back and really hit this. This episode is brought to you by Uber Eats. Every football season, the same thing happens. The game somehow makes everybody really hungry. Quarterback scrambles, clearly a sign for breakfast burritos. Yeah. Turnover, suddenly dessert at 2 p.m. doesn't sound so crazy. Wing formations, well, those can only mean buffalo wings, as if they're ever not in play. Even the goalposts start looking suspiciously like French fries. It's almost like football is sending the message to eat more food. Yeah, the good news, Uber Eats makes those cravings easy to satisfy with game day deals all season long. From wings and pizza to chips, drinks, and even last minute grocery runs. Don't sleep on those. You'll find savings on all your favorites delivered straight to your door. Order now on Uber Eats. All right, so Kurt Goldsberry asked me before the break, is Cooper Flagg ready to be great right away? And I'm doing all my basketball stuff next week. I don't want to step on any take, any opinion, any over under prediction, anything. But I'm going to do it just for this because I can't believe their over under is 41.5. And I think, so last year they were 39-43, but they had the Luka trade halfway, you know, in January, whenever it was. And Davis played a game and got hurt, completely messed up year. And they bring in D'Lo at least for first half of the season. Kyrie hopefully comes in. I don't see any scenario. 41.5 means basically 42-40. It means they're going to have a winning season. I don't see any scenario where Dallas is 500 or under this season. They're going to be too fucking good defensively. And the reason is because Cooper Flagg, who's an over-competitive psycho, who you would have known that if you watched at Duke or followed him in high school, anything, he's a maniac. And they're going to have him with Davis, with Lively, with Gafford, with PJ Washington. This team's going to be such a bitch to try to score against, get offense against. They're going to win 43 games just on defense. So I'm in. I'm in on a bunch of Dallas stuff, but that one was the one that jumped out. And to answer your question again, I think he's going to be good right away. I think he's going to be like genuinely noticeably impactful. And it's going to be every game because of the way he's wired.
Yeah. And I did that big feature with him for the Ringer right before the draft, which I got to meet him and spend time with his people up in Maine. And it was thrilling for me. But I also, you know, fell in love with the subject and I love this guy. And I'm a believer now, too. The first preseason look only sort of solidified my stance that he is going to be impactful right away. When we were asked to do the Ringer 100 rankings, I had a really tough time figuring out where to put him. I ended up putting him at 31, Bill, because I think he's going to be really good right away. And again, you can roast me all you want, but this dude is going to be a two-way force.
I had him 34.
Oh, see? What a great... What
and
a great...
By the way, I initially had him... I sent it to House and one other friend I have for a list, and I had him in the 20s. And both of them had an intervention. What? They're like, he's never played a game. You can't put him in the 20s. You can't put him against real guys. And I'm like, I don't know, man. This is going to be one of the most additive guys that has come into the league this century. Everything he does helps the team win.
I'll tell you the stat that Joe House needs to hear, which is Cooper Flagg was the youngest or second youngest player in all of college basketball last year. And he won the Naismith Trophy.
Right.
He was 17. His twin brother is just starting at the University of Maine this fall. He's a baby, and he was the best player in college
He's
hoops.
A freak. It's actually not a big enough story. I don't think like this is like a fucking prodigy coming
he's
in here.
19 in December. Like he is.
My only fear with him is I just want them to use him correctly and not try to do this thing where they're trying to teach him how to be a point forward. And some of the stuff we saw Durant's first year in Seattle, they're like, you're a two guard. And all of a sudden they were using him as a two guard. That was stupid. Giannis had that stretch, which I think ultimately long-term helped him, but short-term was really ugly to watch when Jason Kidd was trying to make him a point guard. And with Flagg, I just like ease him into it. This is not who the offense should be running around. All these young guards are going to be diving at his legs and trying to steal the ball from him. Just, you know, it took Tatum until year six to be a point forward. You know, or year five.
And he'll make the right plays. And that's what I think his summer league debut sort of captured that too. Like he's not making his shots, but he's still the best player on the court because he's making every other play. He doesn't care. I mean, it's a cliche. He doesn't care about his own points.
No.
He cares about winning, as you alluded to earlier. He's the most competitive prospect.
He's the most additive prospect. I can't think of another one in the last 15 years. Davis is probably the closest. Like what Davis was in Kentucky.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh yeah, you can put that anywhere and figure out how to make it work. The thing about Flagg, I really do think he can play the three with them. I do 100%. Think they can play Davis with the center and then have him at the three and his ability. He's going to be like what Tatum was like last year for the Celtics. We're just able to guard every position on the court. He's going to be able to guard guards. He's going to be able to guard small forwards. And there's going to be teams that come in to play Dallas that are just going to be like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
What? We can't get in. We can't get a shot within 15 feet of the basket. And every time we think we have something, somebody switches on to a guy. That's why I feel like the D'Lo Kyrie thing, I don't even really care.
Yeah.
Because ultimately they're going to have so much size and length and switchability and just all things that we know works in the NBA.
Yeah, I'm with you on the over-under. It's fascinating to me that their number is lower than the San Antonio number because I just compare those teams. That seems backwards to me because I think that the Mavericks do have a signature thing, which is one of the best front courts, if not the best front court in the NBA because I love Lively. Gafford is great. Then you have AD, Cooper Flagg, PJ Washington. I think this is just a deeper, more physical, athletic team than people realize. And I think they have a chip on their shoulder, too. They weren't happy with how last year went down. They're looking at this year as a chance to reframe the conversation.
I didn't realize you were going to agree with me on this. I thought we were going to argue about it. I'm like a 10 out of 10 bullish on them this season. Like, yeah. I looked at the odds. They're 27-1 to win the West. And I'm not saying they're going to win the West. But Golden State is 16-1. And the Lakers are 10-1 and the Clippers are 10-1 and Houston with no Van Vliet is 10-1. And I just think if Kyrie is back and able to give them something combined with what they're getting from Flagg, which is basically, we both think he's going to be one of the best 35 guys in the league. You're just putting that in there and somebody that's going to Swiss Army knife everything they're doing. OKC and Denver I have up there and I have Minnesota, Houston, 3A, 3B. And then after that, I don't see any reason why they couldn't be as good or better than any of those other teams.
Yeah, I went through the West myself. OKC and Denver, we agree, are on a separate plane.
Yes.
OKC probably above Denver. And then there's a clump. And there was a clump last year. And Houston was at the top of the clump, but just barely. And I think that's still the case. It's Minnesota, the Clippers, the Warriors, the Lakers. You have to put them there, the Rockets. But I like the Mavs. Again, they have a robust set of players. They, depth is one of the most important things in the current NBA, and they're deep. And D'Lo, by the way, who's never been my favorite player, but is in another contract year situation. I think he has an option next season. He's going to want to prove, maybe to the Mavericks or maybe to the rest of the league, that he's worth a bigger deal than the 1 year, $6.5 million deal or whatever they're paying him on with that option. So I think, look,
you know who D'Lo is? He's your buddy that comes to visit, and it's really great when he's only there for one day. And by day six, you're like, I'm ready for him to leave. That's D'Lo. D'Lo would be great for the one day, which in this case will be 2 months of his first season with the Mavericks. And they'll go through all the stages of D'Lo, right? They're gonna be like, wow, what a steal. My God, D'Lo at 35 tonight. He's amazing. They're not gonna have to worry about the playoff version of him because Kyrie will be back by then. But
and he's got he'll be seductive too. And I think Jason Kidd deserves a mention too, right, Bill? It's like, okay, can he get through to D'Lo? Maybe not, but he's played with AD before.
I don't know if anyone's getting through D'Lo at this
That's point. Fair. And I do think, but there's a chance Kyrie comes back in February or March, and they have one of the deepest teams in the West if the health gods bless them this year.
So they are over the first apron, under the second apron.
We didn't even mention Hard Klay Thompson, dude.
Sure. I didn't have him. No, he's a nice rotation guy, but when I think about like their defensive apex with the five guys, I don't have him out there. But yeah, I think Dallas is going to be really good. I'm really excited about it. I can't wait for Flag. I think they're going to be a potential must watch. Mm. And I had one more thing on this. So if you had to, would you rank Dallas ahead of San Antonio right now?
100%. And that's no shade against my friends in San Antonio. I'm worried about the De'Aaron Fox thing. The hamstring, you can tell me he's going to miss a week or two, but you know, like a younger Chris Paul, once the hamstring starts going, that's his thing. He needs speed. He needs those muscles to be going at full speed to play the De'Aaron Fox game. So yeah, I think there's less question marks in the Dallas rotation than there are in the San Antonio rotation.
You know, it's funny, San Antonio at 44.5. I could totally see them being really good this year because just Wemby's just becomes awesome, right? Mm-hmm. Like of all the MVP guys, because MVP is going to come down to the same four guys it always comes down to. But Wemby's like the wild card at 12-1, where it's like, yeah, we might be 1 week into the season, that might be 3-1 because he just had 49 points and 12 blocks against somebody. I think from a fun standpoint, I probably have Houston third. But what about if I asked you, you could be any of these three teams for the rest of the decade?
Ooh.
You'd pick San Antonio, correct?
I would pick San Antonio. And it's not for the current year or even maybe the next year. But the same reason those GMs are saying that, it's because I got the alien at the center of my roster under cost control. I think he's making 13% of the cap. And another group to watch are my old friends in the San Antonio front office. They have a really high stakes moment here, Bill, to surround Victor Wembanyama with a talented enough group to do what he's capable of doing and not end up in like a LeBron in the first Cleveland administration era.
Well, you know where that got kind of hosed? They played that DeJounte Murray trade perfectly.
Mm.
They had those Hawks picks. And yet the Hawks are now going to be good. So you have someday we'll have the Hawks picks. And it's like, oh, that's not going to really help you because the Hawks are probably going to be a four seed.
Well, let me give some love to there's a poetic thing behind what you just said is my guy, Ansi Salo, the new GM of the Hawks, is a protege of R.C. Buford. And he learned. And just like Sam Presti, you learn in San Antonio and then you start becoming a problem for San Antonio. But yeah, you're exactly right with those Hawks picks.
So the GM survey you mentioned, John Schumann, shout out to him. Always enjoy his all his stuff during the year on NBA.com, especially the Monday Power Poll, I think is a must read. So they asked, the last question in the GM survey was, what rule, parentheses, regarding play schedule, draft lottery, playoff format, roster construction, et cetera, most needs to change? And they said, number one at 26% was roster construction. And some of the things mentioned were apron rules too harsh, add a cap discount for own drafted players. Mentioned that multiple times on this podcast. Yep. Allow trading partial salaries and make all minimum contracts the same. We all agree that the apron rules are so stupid that I actually think Adam Silver needs to pop some chest hair and maybe reopen this and be like, we kind of fucked this up. Can we, is there a way to fix this before next season? Because this is too prohibitive. This is stupid. He won't, but he should. Allow trading partial salaries almost broke my brain.
Yeah.
So I guess that means I can trade somebody, but only 15 million of him, like somebody's making 30 million. I trade 15 million, I'll still carry my cap, and you have to carry the 15 million on yours. Baseball has trades like this. Basketball doesn't. I thought it was a pretty good idea. I was kind of mad I never thought of it. Right?
Yeah, it's just a general reaction to front offices are having a hard time right now, and we can't build out teams the way we want to with this rule. Because I've written earlier this summer, this is a hard cap. The second apron is a hard cap. What do we have, one team over
it's
it right now?
It's always been a hard cap. Right.
And it hasn't been good for players. And it's really harsh on general managers who are trying to build teams. But the trading partial salaries, they would have to amend the CBA on my understanding. And it's just like, that's not going to happen.
No, nothing that would actually be logical can happen. The second thing was draft schedule. They said back to one day or only lottery on day one or do it after free agency. That got 19%. And then game flow, which would have been the other one I did. Continuous faster review, hockey style subs, no live ball timeouts. I was talking to Zach this week.
Mm-hmm.
And this, the game flow thing is the number one thing, because we were talking about how much we've enjoyed baseball the last couple of years since the changes, and especially playoff baseball has been great. And with the NBA, if they figure out how to change the last 3 minutes to a way that's actually fun to watch, I think it would have the same impact that it had with baseball, where people look at each other and go, wow, this is way better. I'm glad they did this. Mm-hmm. The NBA hasn't tried to do anything like that for us in a long time. And you know, I don't know why they won't fix it.
Yeah, I think there was a Celtics-Cavs game last year around December or January or something where the last few minutes took 27 minutes or something. And that was the game that put me over the edge. And then another thing is, like, you spend the summer watching Eurobasket or whatever, and you see an alternative where the last 2 minutes take 4 minutes of real time, and you're just left being like, this is, what are we doing? I do think that's really unfortunate, something that they should, if I voted on this, that would be one I would have voted for, because it's something that I think the commissioner could change and make the product in the Theo Epstein sense a lot more attractive to us consumers.
I'd also make halftime 3 more minutes.
Longer.
And I'd get rid of a timeout in the second half. In that GM survey, what team has the most promising young core? OKC got 50%. San Antonio got 27%. The next two teams were tied at 10%. Houston, I would have guessed. Detroit surprised me.
Yeah.
Nah, it's only 10%, but I would not have had them on the list. And I don't know, 10% seemed high. Did that surprise you or no?
People like the Thompson twins are everybody's high on the Thompson twins right now.
Everyone's
so that
high
gets
on
them
Asar,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think Jalen Duren, who if you go see the NBA in person, this guy leaps off the floor. He just
old
looks
school.
Old school, big guy. And then obviously Cade and Ivy. So I could see it. They are very good. They have a very good young core. I think Trajan Langdon has completely, in the same way Ime reinvented the Rockets really quickly, Trajan deserves some credit for getting this Detroit situation right real fast.
I have some questions. which team's level of success this season is toughest to predict? So Philly, was number one with 47%. So they almost had half of the votes. And then that there's like seven teams tied at 7% for second. I was shocked that Philly won because I actually don't think Philly's season is that tough to predict because we all know how it's going to go. What's tough to predict? Yeah, if a million things go right, that might be good. To me, it's Indiana. I would have said Indiana for that would have been my answer for this. I don't know what to expect from them. I know they lost Haliburton, but I'm also not going to pour dirt on them yet.
I could make the case for Philly, Bill.
Okay.
I know you love to roast Joel Embiid and Paul George and our old friend Daryl for these contracts. But there is a world where Joel plays 60 games or 55 games and Paul George plays 70.
Is this 70. An AI world?
And VJ Edgecombe, by the way, some very exciting early highlights from VJ.
Okay, he's a guard.
Tyrese Maxey.
He's a guard.
I do think they're very hard to predict because ultimately I side with you. I would not wager a lot of confidence with Joel Embiid's availability. And without him, their MVP, it is pretty easy to predict where they're going to land. But it's clearly the league is hedging on Joel Embiid playing somewhere around 56 games.
What makes anyone think that that's going to happen? I don't mean a dick, but like, it's gotten to the point if he plays 60 games, I think that would be genuinely shocking. At this point,
what are the odds? What is his over under in your head if you're setting it for how many games Joel Embiid would play? You hear 35. That, FanDuel? We need an over under for Joel Embiid games played.
And then here's the other one, Paul George, whose 2020s look like this: 48 games, 54, 31, 56, yeah. 74, 41. The basketball reference, when you have that hard drop at when you're later in your career, you know, mid 30s, 15th season, 16th season, and you have the hard stat drop, it ain't coming back. Just point me to the guy who's like, oh, remember that amazing comeback season that guy had at age 37?
When all the signs were going. King?
Bernard King didn't play. He came back and he still had the stats, yeah. But it wasn't like he didn't. Because I remember in the 2000s, I was writing about this for like three straight years with Jermaine O'Neal, yeah. Where there was this 3-year stretch where people were still treating Jermaine O'Neal like he was a 24-10 guy, and that guy was gone. And they're like, oh, they got Jermaine O'Neal, you know, important center. It's like, he's not Jermaine O'Neal anymore. I don't personally think Paul George is Paul George anymore.
And this, to give you credit, I've been reading you for 20 years now, whatever, 25 years, but you've been talking about age curves before they were common. And one of my favorite sites on the internet, shout out to Darko, the NBA stats app. They have these aging curves that are really, really strong for publicly available. And if you look at Joel and Paul George's career trajectory, you'll see exactly what you just outlined.
Yeah.
Very troubling declines in their 30s. Not unusual, by the way. NBA players rarely make it to 36, 37 in one piece and playing is better. LeBron has deformed our expectations in this regard, but
he doesn't count. Yeah, he's over.
He doesn't count. And Kevin, even, I mean, playing this well at age 37. So some of these guys are distracting us from a more common rank and file reality of aging. And Paul George is definitely on that typical downturn.
Yeah, like a good example is Karl Malone, who was always in the 27 and 10 kind of range. Yeah. And then by that last Utah year, he was down to a 20-8 guy. And then the Lakers signed him, and then he dropped down to 13-8 after that. But usually when you're at a certain point in your state, we even saw with Chris Paul. Chris Paul was always like a 20-10, 19-11 type guy. And then it dipped down to that 15 and whatever. Anyway, I don't think Paul George is going to be a 20-6 with 40%. I don't know. I could talk about Philly all day. On that, there was one more thing on that GM poll that I was excited about, but now I couldn't find it. Which team has the best home court advantage? Denver was 43%, OKC was 43%, and nobody else. The Knicks were 7% third. And that was the one where I was like, they've nailed it with this. Denver's got the altitude. OKC is the loudest fucking fans you've ever heard. And those are clearly the two best now.
South Beach is undefeated, as they say. But I agree. I mean, the hardest place I had to go with the Spurs was OKC. That was, that's insane. Like, in terms of the crowd impact, it is definitely OKC. Elevation, and then the cultural impacts in Miami, I think, are hard to beat. But I do think that they nailed that one.
Yeah. So I asked you to give me a trend that you're excited about heading into the 25-26 season. We have now reached the point of the podcast where you're going to unveil the trend.
Excited about, I don't know, but one of the craziest stats that's come out last year was that for the first time in NBA history, more rebounds are coming from missed three-point shots than missed two-point shots. In other words, the quintessential rebound now, if you're teaching a young player to get rebounds, you're teaching them how to rebound three-point shots, which is crazy.
So it's you're crazy. Teaching them like a corner three, move to the other side of the basket.
Yeah, positioning it's gonna bounce, yourself.
It's going to bounce toward the baseline, be near the baseline, you can grab it.
Yeah, so I think the art of rebounding, we've gone from a Moses Malone reality. If you picture Moses, probably the greatest rebounder of my youth growing up, watching those Sixers teams at the end of his career. But he wasn't getting a lot of missed threes in his diet. It was all six-footers that bounced off, and he was pushing around another giant person. But there's a paradigm shift, Bill, that rebounding itself is now about getting longer rebounds. And, you know, people like Giannis are perfectly built for this task. Like, you're more athletic, you're rangier, you have these arms. Victor Wembanyama is going to be great at this. But
so speed and length.
Speed and length. And it's not as much as about strength as it used to be. I think strength is very important. But I would say speed and length have entered the chat in terms of being a complete rebounder, where missed corner threes, missed 30 footers. That's a different art form than what we grew up with, grabbing missed 8 footers. And the data back it up. Again, for the first time in NBA history, more rebounds are coming off threes than twos.
Jesus.
And it's gonna continue to increase. So yeah, it's just interesting. If you're teaching young players to get rebounds in college basketball, you're teaching them to rebound missed threes, which is crazy.
This was my dramatic Lazarus-like return in the early 2010s to pick up basketball with Dave Jacoby playing at USC for a couple of years.
Yeah, I remember.
It was twos and ones.
Yes.
But then that's what I thought it was going to be. But at USC, it was just ones. But then people would just shoot threes anyway. And I was always fascinated. This is right as the three-point influence was starting. And people were just jacking up threes. And it was just the experience of rebounding threes and trying to figure out where they were going. It would always be like the same 4 or 5 spots. And I wonder if this is like a math efficiency that these coaches are secretly trying. Like that. Like there's like a heat chart map with like clusters of like they shoot here. Because it was always like top of the key could go anywhere.
Yeah,
but if somebody was top of the key to the right, it was either bouncing back to them or was bouncing off the back of the rim and going like almost toward the baseline. So you kind of knew where to go.
Yeah, we did that. I remember I did two pieces at Grantland that are relevant to this. One was where rebounds go. So we mapped out, you know, 100,000 rebounds and based on where the shot was, and statistically a lot more rebounds on corner threes go to the weak side.
Right.
Top of the key, as you alluded to, a little harder to predict. Generally, the physics is going to take it to the other side. But one of the more secretly viral pieces, and I think Jacoby helped with this a little bit at Grantland, was I wrote about the tyranny of ones and twos in pickup basketball, because it was a perverse incentive for terrible shooters to shoot more and more threes.
It was the worst thing that ever happened.
And people either loved this piece or hated it, but it got, I don't know how we counted it back in those days,
I remember
Facebook shares or whatever, but it was like people, and I was like, we should be playing twos and threes in pickups, Bill. And
no kidding. And instead of playing to 11, play to 21, and play to 18 or whatever we want to get to.
Yeah, because we're incentivizing terrible shooters to shoot more and more threes. The other trend I had, which was darker, was just the, and I wanted to get your take on this.
The return of cocaine? How dark are we getting?
What's dark about that? But no, I was just saying, with the LeBron news. The trend, and I want to shout out Tom Haberstroh for finding this last year, and I think it's going to continue this year, is just the sheer amount of missed games from the league's best players. And I know that's a darker trend, But yeah. I was going to, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think we're going to continue to see more and more guys, De'Aaron Fox missing the opening of the season? Obviously, Fred VanVleet. Are we going to see more and more of these injuries taken away from the greatness of the regular season?
I just think, I've said this a million times, I think basketball's too hard to play now. It doesn't, the way, how hard it is to play compared to what the schedule is not compatible. And eventually we'll realize this, but we just haven't gotten to that point yet. I think college football is hitting this point right now where with the amount of games they have on the schedule. I don't think it's sustainable for people in 18, 19, 20, 21. They're going to be playing 14, 15 playoff game or 15 games. Like, that's insane. But I think with the basketball, I just think it's too much running. I don't think it's a coincidence that we've had these injuries to younger guys like Tatum and Haliburton that we never had before. And I think it's too much stress on people's legs.
Yeah, I think the interactions, people don't talk about that. You've talked about it for a while now, but the interaction between the style that we're playing, pace and space, the 82 games that we're playing. And
the workouts are the other piece, because right. That's not part of the games, but the workouts these guys do to quote unquote get in awesome shape.
Yeah.
I don't know. Then, nobody worked that harder than Tatum, and his Achilles fucking, you know, snapped.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. And I know we talked a lot about the schedule last year, but maybe we'll look more into this. But I do think that's something the league needs to really look at seriously is the availability of these top players.
They don't care. They could have addressed it and they just don't give a shit. Can I give you my trend?
Yeah, dude.
This is good. I haven't unveiled this yet.
Oh, I love it.
So I feel like this steps a little on the preview pods next week, but I just feel like somebody's going to say this before we do the pod, and I just have to get it out there. I think the Celtics are going to be absolutely deranged this year on offense. Like, I think they averaged 48 threes a game last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to average like 55 threes a game. I think they're going to have games where they shoot 70. I think the pace that they're going to play with is going to be genuinely shocking to people. And it's almost like when, whatever that Paul Westhead Denver Nuggets team, when they were just like, we're going to run and gun, but they had no system or style to anything they were doing. I think the Celtics actually have a system, and I think they're going to play faster because they don't have Tatum. And this is the one caveat with Tatum that he did, you know, he was particular. He did slow the ball off sometimes. Yeah. He did take his time. Nobody's going to be taking their time anymore. This team is going to be like, it's going to be like the run and shoot offense in the NFL. They're just going to be spreading the floor with five receivers and fucking throwing it and keeping the other defense on the field. And I don't think people understand how crazy it's going to be. I think it's going to be insane.
Do you know how many threes they shot in their preseason game this week against the Grizzlies?
Probably it was over 50, right? Like 55?
Yeah, 53. So, yeah.
And that was with the scrubs.
So who's taken more shots for your team this year than they did last year?
So here's one for you, Kirk Goldsberry. Here's a little future I'll give to my longtime listeners on FanDuel. Pritchard is 25-1 yep. to hit the most threes this year. 25-1. White's 18-1. Pritchard finished fifth last year, and he's going to play more, and he's going to have the ball more, and I think he could lead the league in threes. But I think if Simons, if they keep him,
yeah,
Derek White, Jalen is going to be like, I mean, go all the overs for him if you like betting overs. Is Jalen on the 30 points a game list?
No, he shouldn't.
Yeah, he is. 7-1 to average 30 points a game. It's four more points a game than he averaged last year. He's going to have way more shots with a faster pace. But I just think they're going to be jacking threes. And I think they're not tanking. Missoula's a maniac, and they're going to be like, we're going to try to system this. And Tatum's not going to be denied. He's coming back. I mean, it quote unquote was breaking news today. Anyone who follows the team or knows anything about it, like, this has been brewing for 2 months. He's coming back. They're not going to be able to stop it.
No, that's, and I was just going to say, Pritchard, Sam Hauser's going to play more, shoot more.
Hauser's going to shoot a shitload of them. Yeah. Yeah.
I could see this. So, and Shireman,
wait till you see. And also all the centers they have, like Luka Garza, like they're all going to be firing up threes, all of them.
And Tillman? I would guess Joe Mazzulla's philosophy is this. without Jason Tatum, we have to do everything we can to optimize our offensive efficiency, guys. We have to do everything we can.
And we can win with math. We can win with threes
that's
and pace.
What's his math quote? That's exactly right. And so he can lean into that. And if you look at his trajectory and three-point rate, which has already broken the record, to last year's team broke the record for three-point rate in NBA history, I think that's a good take. And I think it'll be Pritchard, Sam House, Derek White might shoot 10 a night. And I know that sounds crazy, but he might shoot 10 a night because Tatum, I think, was shooting 10 or 12 a game, wasn't he? 9 a game? Those shots are gone. So somebody else is going to do it. And some of the guys getting those minutes and those shots are 3-point assassins.
There was one game, I can't find it. There was one game last year where Tatum didn't play and they played fast. Because one of the things with me and why I can't count out Indiana and Boston this year is coaches who are really competitive, who have systems and are used to playing without their stars. The Celtics played multiple games without Tatum last year intentionally, and they would play differently when they didn't have him. And Indiana would do the same. And I just think they're going to try to win more than people think. Like, I think their over-under is maybe 42.5, something like that.
It's one of my favorite things, right? It's like when you have a great coach or a great team and somebody rests, like when Tim Duncan rested, teams would be like, this is going to be easy. No, it's not. They're still going to beat you. And I do think Rick Carlisle and Joe Mazzulla deserve that level of respect. And these teams, nobody thought Indiana was going to be good last year.
One guy who's not going to like it is my dad, because he already thought they shot too many threes anyway. I don't think he has any idea what's going to happen this year. Jaylen Brown just jacking up threes with 19 seconds left in the shot clock, because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
This is who they're going to be for 50 games.
They'll break the record. My bold prediction is they'll break the record for most threes in a game this year. That would be mine.
What is that record?
I'm going to guess it's 75. I don't know. I'm looking it up.
Well, they set the record last year for threes attempted. It was almost, I'm going to say it was almost 4,000, something like that.
Yeah. They tied the record with 29 made and attempted at 63.
63.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big number in Boston for the Celtics history.
They will so easily break that. Like, mark that down.
Yeah, I think that's
definitely
right.
Definitely shoot more than 63 threes in one of the games this year.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think Pritchard could have a game where he shoots like 20 threes.
Where does he land this year? Do you think he's gonna score 20 points a game?
Well, the points have to come from somewhere, right?
I agree.
Tatum's leaving 28 points for everybody else, and they're gonna have to divvy up some of them. And they don't, like, Simons will step in on some of them, assuming he's on the team for a while. So maybe that's 16, 17 of them. Pritchard's an extra 4 to 5. Jalen's an extra 3 to 4. I don't know if it's in him to just gun and shoot. You know, maybe it'll be a little more, but then it comes down to like a Hauser situation.
I think
if Hauser's going to play 30 minutes a game, I don't know. They're going to be weird to play if you're just like, you're doing an NBA schedule and it's like, we're going here, we're in Toronto, then we play the Knicks, then we have Philly, and then it's like, oh, we're playing that weird Boston team. Get ready. Put your sneakers on.
That's what
we'll
it's
be running.
Be. I think that's right. Yeah. And I think Peyton is going to be good. But I told Zach on his podcast, I think Derek White does have it in him to be a 30-point
interesting
every other. Yeah, I mean, he's a very, very smart player, and he'll know what they need to win games. And you're exactly right. With Tatum out, he is the most qualified guy to take that step forward. Him and Peyton Pritchard, I expect to be bigger volume scorers.
I agree. Kurt Goldsberry, great to see you. What do you got?
That's just a stress ball. That's for basketball. No big deal. Right. Oh, Saturday. I got an article on The Ringer tomorrow, the 7 charts that define the quarter century in the NBA. So check that out.
Oh,
yeah.
Sounds great. Great to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. Recording later afternoon Pacific time. Joe House here, as always, to do our really sad Ringer 107. We're going to try to turn around this week. We brought in some help.
I'm not sad.
We're going to have a threesome this week, House. Married couples sometimes need to spice it up.
Oh, boy. Oh, no.
Our friend Lord. Chris Vernon to spice it up with us. But I do want to tell you.
Style.
So you weren't here when I had Kurt Goldsberry on. We talked basketball. I did my whole thing about how I thought the Celtics were going to be deranged in a good way on offense, and people don't realize they're actually going to be pretty fun and better than people think. And I talked to my dad, who watched the game, and my dad goes, you know who I loved? And I thought he was going to say, like, I don't know, Peyton Pritchard or whatever. He's like, Hugo Gonzalez.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
going to be really good right away. And I'm like, basketball season is here. My dad has adopted the 13th man on the team as allegedly going to help us. But Verno, you saw the game.
I agree with your father.
Whoa!
Oh, yeah. I'm in on Hugo.
You're in.
Oh, yeah. Ball came off the rim. You know, there's at that point, your animal instinct comes in, right? And there's some guys that fade away, and there's some guys that hold on to it, and there's some guys that start ripping the ball away. They just got this extra level of aggression. That was Gonzalez. Also, got a ball on the break and hammered it. On a breakaway, and I was like, okay, Hugo Gonzalez, your team is going to stink, but come Hugo on. Gonzalez is going to be fun.
We're
going to
shoot 60 plus threes a game, and it's going to be awesome. And Jason Tatum's coming back. He said it today.
Last night was an absolute abomination before the eyes of God and man. It was 60 fouls and 76 free throws in a preseason game. It's unwatchable. It's totally unwatchable.
What's the referee agenda this year? What are they trying to crack down on? Could you even tell?
No. I could not tell.
60 effing fouls. What are we talking about? 60
fouls. It was, yeah, I know. Right? Because a couple of years ago.
For? Like, what point are we making?
It was terrible. It was terrible to watch. No, you just need, like, you got a big guy you can find. You ain't got no big guys,
no.
Bill.
Wait, my dad and I mentioned that before I hung up on him to do this part of the podcast. We're like, I'm excited to watch the team. We don't have anyone who can rebound. A crucial part of basketball.
I mean, you can't run out, you know, Tillman and Garza. And like, I mean, it's just, I mean, again, when the other teams have like, you know, when you're playing on a Tuesday night and you're going up against, you know, Alperen Şengün and Steven Adams, like you might not touch the ball.
These are all very fair points, and I'm still going over for the Celtics, and you know I'm going over.
I listened to your pod last week. I don't hate the Jaylen Brown, like, tops in the league in scoring. I mean, who else is gonna score? Seriously, I went and looked it up tonight.
Yeah,
he's averaged 27 a game in games without Tatum. And that's when they had other, like, real players on the team. Who is he worried about passing to on that team? Maybe Derek?
I said to Goldsberry, one of my favorite FanDuel bets, I don't think I've given this to Joe House either. House, you should make this bet live on the show. House just checked out.
Book's open. The book's open. Hold on. I'm opening
Peyton
it up.
Peyton Pritchard for most threes this season. 25-1.
25-1. Peyton Pritchard most threes.
Guess where he finished last year for threes? Fifth.
Sure.
They're all going to be divvying up Tatum's shots and points. Like, like it's like dad didn't come home for dinner and you get like extra food.
I thought it was cool. Tatum was here. He was with the team and like was over been, at the, yeah, over at the University of Memphis, and he visited with Penny Hardaway and he was bopping around. And I mean, like, I always think there's something to that, right? Like, he could be away. He could be just staying at home. Like, why is he traveling to preseason games?
He's been in the facility every day since he got hurt.
Yeah.
House and I are doing over-unders next week. I don't want to step on that, but we do have Chris Vernon here, Mr. Memphis. FanDuel gave Memphis the all-time FU over-under total of 40.5, House. You could go 500 and get a W with this. They went 48-34 last year, but you have some injuries even before the season starts. But what do we expect from the Grizz?
I think that they're going over that. That's appalling. Come on.
Is it?
Break. Yeah, I mean, look, again, you can always do and you could do this with every team, if so-and-so is healthy. But, I mean, they had Morant for 50 games last year. And look at what their record was.
Well, I mean, can you walk us through the injuries? Walk us through the injuries for this year.
Okay, Jackson will be back. He'll be fine.
But when does he come back and when does Edie come back?
Within the first week of the season. He might be back before. I mean, he might be back for opening night. But, I mean, he'll be back. I would be stunned if Jaren Jackson Jr. misses more than four games. I don't think he'll even
miss
four.
How about Edie?
Probably December, I'd guess.
No, that means January.
They're just going to be super careful with that because it was a foot surgery. But, I mean, he was at the game last night, and he's walking around without a boot. And so,
how's Memphis Grizzlies to make the playoffs? Plus 154. Oof.
I don't know. I mean, I'm look at the roster.
I think that's a no for me, too. They're minus 210 for a no. I think it's a no for me, Verno. Make the case. Swing us.
When they have had John Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., they've always won over 60% of their games. Last year, they were the 2 seed until the last month of the season when they totally collapsed. The 2 previous years, when they were both healthy, they were the 2 seed both of those years. And then, of course, they had the season from hell where the whole team got hurt, and then they got the lottery pick, and then they move into this year. And again, when John Morant plays, they win. When Jaren Jackson plays, they win. So if you want to hedge and bet against them playing, but they have been good enough to even win despite John Morant only playing 50 games last year.
And when Jaren Jackson plays, they win, unless it's Team USA.
Oh, stop. Stop. Come on.
That was just for House.
I did enjoy it.
I got to please House every once in a while.
I did enjoy it.
So is it fair to say this is your starting five, Verna? Jaren Jackson? Santi?
No. I don't think so. I think at the very beginning of the season, possibly.
All right. Oh, let's go backwards. Jaren Jackson and Ja. Who were the other three people starting for the Grizzlies?
Caldwell Pope. Maybe Wells. If it's not Wells, I'd imagine the 10th pick, Cedric Coward. And then
Cedric Coward starting.
No. It'll be Wells at the beginning.
Okay.
That's what I think. I think it'll be Wells at the beginning and then Coward eventually. That's what I'd guess.
And Ty Jerome is 6th man?
Correct. And then it'll be Edie. But in the absence of Edie, it'll be Landell at the beginning of the season. It'll be Jock Landell, who's just going to set screens and be a poor man Steven Adams, you know?
And still have Pippen.
Correct. Still have Pippen.
Unless you trade him to the Rockets for like one of those Nets picks or something. Try to hijack him.
I suppose anything is possible that you could try to change. And then they need one of these guys.
They're not getting a Nets pick for Pippen, by the way. They
need one of these guys that was pretty good 2 years ago. GG Jackson or Vince Williams to pop. Like, they need one of them to be able to go. And then, you know, off the bench, they're going to have, we mentioned, Santi Aldama, Scottie Pippen Jr., Ty Jerome. Like, they got good players.
This was not a compelling case. You don't seem compelled at all.
If you want to sell me on 41 wins for this team, and that's an over, right? 41 is over.
41's over.
Then I think I can work my way there. But this team,
I mean, it's all dependent on whether or not what your level of belief in Morant is. And my level is obviously going to be greater than y'all's. Like,
that's true.
I think when he plays, he is a superstar that makes everybody better.
I can't believe what I watched from this team defensively last year at the end of the season. I just can't
appalling.
Can't well, believe it.
The coach got fired, House.
So congratulations. he deserved it. I mean.
So John Morant now 26 years old, House.
Yeah.
This is right around when it's got to happen or it's not going to happen.
It's got to happen.
It's got to happen. He's got to play. We'll set the over-under for number of games that John Morant's going to play, and then I'll tell you how many games they're going to win. Tell me how many games he's going to play.
All right. Let's say he gets to the number. Let's say he gets to 65.
That'd be almost a career high.
That's true. It would be.
Literally, that'd be a career high. Really. He played 67 as his career high.
Yep. I mean, I don't know. And he's gotten beat up for it. Look, I mean, there's a lot of guys that have gotten beat up for their injuries. And then, it's interesting the way it plays out. It's also when you get injured. If you're not able to finish out seasons like he didn't last year when he got clipped in the Oklahoma City series. And so, because, you know, they do these rankings and you see on the rankings, like, you never bring up that Chet Holmgren doesn't play, do you? Never. Chet Holmgren's averaged, 30 games a year in his 3 years in the NBA?
So I'm in the playoffs for 4 straight rounds.
That's what I'm saying. It's all dependent on when you get hurt.
House, do you think Ja Morant career games combined with Zion Williamson career games added together is more than Joel Embiid's career games?
Yes. Yes.
You think yes?
Those two. Yeah. Well, because they're still both young. And Joel Embiid has 1 year left. What do you think,
Verno? Joel Embiid career games versus...
Up to this point?
Yeah, right now.
Oh, I misunderstood. I thought you were saying career-wise.
No.
Okay, I misunderstood.
Yeah, career-wise. Zion's career games plus Ja's career games versus Embiid's career games. What number is higher?
I mean, Embiid was... He's been in the league so much longer.
Right, I agree.
So it'll have to be Embiid.
The answer is Zion plus Ja Morant together.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Embiid's played 452 games. Zion has played 214 in 11 years. Zion's at 214. And Ja Morant is at a zesty 307. 523 combined. Okay. 67, 63, 57, 61, 9, and 50. I'm going to say
the reason I get upset about the Morant stuff, Morant has led and carried a team to the playoffs.
To winning stuff.
Don't talk about him like you talk about Zion, like you talk about LaMelo, like you talk about all these other guys that haven't done nothing. He has scored, when he scored, whatever, 49 points in a playoff game, like he went head-to-head. He knocked out Golden State on their home floor out of the playoffs. Steph Curry, Draymond Green, the year before they won the title, it is the long forgotten moment that they played in the play-in and he went heads up with them and won on their home floor. When he has been healthy, he has been able to perform at a level that very, very, very few guys in the NBA can match. And again, if you want to bet against his health, I cannot convince you otherwise. Like, I think it's fair. Obviously, it's fair.
House, that was spoken... like a man who has a lot of Ja Morant memorabilia in his son's room.
I should turn this camera around. Oh my God. This game room's got too much. It's better
for
the league
if Ja Morant's healthy, so I'm rooting for it. I'm never not rooting for Ja Morant.
Ja Morant, Zion, and LaMelo. The season's more fun if all of those guys can just fucking play for six straight months.
Yes.
Like, especially LaMelo. I don't know if we've ever really even seen it for six straight months. At least with Ja, we've seen it. With Zion, we saw it for half a year once.
We need it badly, too. They come out with these lists, and none of the top five guys are even American.
There you go. That's exactly right.
We need some of these American guys to stay healthy and pop and become superstars.
Well, thank God for 18-year-old Cooper Flagg.
Yeah.
He's here to save the nation.
Oh God!
He's here to guard five positions on a 55-win Dallas Mavericks team.
Oh my God! What?
My word!
I'm just talking outrageous. Crazy. But I do think they are. I do think they're going to be a playoff team.
You do?
I do. And I don't know.
Hey, who did they play in the play-in last year?
They got murdered by Memphis.
Oh
yeah,
that's right.
The one I don't understand, and I think has the biggest variance all over the place, is Golden State. Because I don't know how variance that is. Well, Pelton's projection system had them for 57 wins, which he admittedly was like, I don't know what to make of this. But
they got awesome players.
They're old.
I got it. But I mean, if you go from the time that they acquired Butler to the day that Curry got hurt.
Yeah.
They were 31-11. I'm going to be rooting for them
more than usual because they have my guy Al Horford, beloved Celtic.
So I'm not saying that they're going to win 30 or 40 games. I think that, you know, look, every game mattered to them at the end of the season because they were just trying to scrap a claw to into the playoffs. And they're probably a vet team that'll probably take some, take nights off. But, I mean, they have showed, you know, between those three, there's not some kind of, unless it shows up this year, they haven't had like a big letdown in talent. Like, I mean, Curry, Draymond, and Butler all still perform at a very, very high level despite their age.
House, what's your dream Giannis trade location? You haven't told me this.
Oh, wow. I haven't really.
You could send him anywhere. Where would you send him?
Denver. I would love to see. I mean, you know,
that can't happen. Realistic. Which is like basically the three Texas teams, the Knicks. I don't know. I can't really say Golden State.
Without having a perspective on who has to go to the Bucks in exchange. Like, who would he be playing with?
I thought the most exciting one, the more and more I thought about it, was if San Antonio just said, fuck it. Just the thought of him and Wemby on the same team would be just so weird to watch those two guys together.
Who can San Antonio send to Milwaukee that Milwaukee would take?
They have all those picks, plus they have young guys. I mean, there's a trade they can put together. Mm. They have a bunch of assets.
And Fox is the big contract?
Maybe Fox is the big contract. Fox already hurt.
I mean,
I was making a face.
I don't like it.
You don't, Bruno, like it? What are you most excited about for the season? Because we're less than 2 weeks away now. What's your number one non-Memphis thing?
The rookie class. Unbelievable. Like, have you guys, I don't know. Again, it's all football right now. But obviously, in the interest of getting ready for the mismatch with me and Jacoby, I have been paying attention in a ridiculous way to this preseason. In a way that I would not normally. Yeah. And so I've been trying to catch up on all the games, watch the highlights, whatever. Last year was such a colossal dud, right? Alex Saar, Reese Ishay, the third pick, Reed Shepard, didn't even play.
It's like a G-leaguer.
I mean, it just stunk. Yeah. And this year, oh my God. I mean, in between the Ace Bailey highlights last night, I mean, freakish. He had 25. And he looks like friggin' Durant out there. I mean, it's unbelievable. I can't believe how he moves for a 6'10 guy. So you've got him. You've got Cooper Flagg. You've got the Yakachunas, the kid from Miami, had like 10 assists in
their
game. That's
my favorite pick.
Good assist, too. Yeah. Good assist. And I mean, just up and down. Coward, Hugo Gonzalez. I saw both of them. You know, last night.
How about Dylan Harper? Buried in the San Antonio bench, probably playing 15 minutes a game.
I just think up and down, especially after we got, you know, Verno,
you got to mention House's new guy.
No, it's fine.
Trey Johnson.
No. Trey Johnson, he's fine. That's going to be good.
He was going to say it.
They haven't played any preseason games yet. Why?
I got to be honest.
Just talk for 2 seconds.
They haven't played any. Play
Trey Johnson. Just give him a look.
It's fine.
Right. Trey Johnson's got knockdown shots. I'm a little upset about the Wizards. So, you know, House has delivered it to me before. I've got friends with the Wizards. They have the most unbelievable bobbleheads. That's what they do.
True.
Like,
very good bobbleheads.
Hey,
true story.
If your team's going to stink, you might as well have good bobbleheads, right? That's what I've always thought, right? Because then people want to come to your games like cool bobbleheads. In fact, look, I'll show you an example. Look at this. This is from the Wizards last year.
There you go.
That's a Pusha T bobblehead.
Yep.
They had Francis Tiafoe. They had all kinds of cool ones, right? So I go look at their promotional schedule this year. I'm like, I cannot. One of the things I really look forward to is Washington Wizards bobbleheads. They have the Kyle Kuzma and the pink sweater.
You have that.
Yeah, I do.
Because I brought it to you.
Yep. Unbelievable ones. They have one friggin' bobblehead night this year.
Oh, they
and
cut back. Cut the budget.
Keyshawn George.
Keyshawn.
Whatever. Who cares? And it's like 1,000 Hawaiian shirt nights, like of different colleges, and then a SpongeBob SquarePants jersey, which is admittedly awesome.
Yes, but I'll get you like one of those.
They're one of the teams that does great.
I'm getting you an Alex Saar.
I feel like they've
jersey.
Abandoned me. You know what
House,
I mean?
What
like,
happened? Are they saving money? What's
no,
going on?
No, definitely not. I don't have a good explanation.
I'll talk to the Leon.
People. Nobody wants the. Nobody's going to come
House.
For the player.
I'll be at the games. I'll be there. So.
Oh, hey, then you know what you got to get me this year? A pair of Bob Carrington pajamas. That's one of the nights.
Okay, done.
Bob Carrington pajama night? That's a night?
Bob Carrington pajamas are at least as good as a bobblehead.
Bob Carrington pajama night.
That's pretty good.
A thing.
Sounds like X-rated.
No. That was a different era. That was the Gilbert Arenas era.
It's a real thing. But anyways, yeah, I was really upset with the Wizards. But yeah, super excited to watch Trey Johnson.
Where are you with the seven stages of Trey Johnson? We're still in the happy honeymoon phase?
Well, I was skeptical. I wanted the big kid from Duke. I wanted like a rim protector for the young defense. But, you know, all the indications are that, you know, he's the hardest worker. He's the first one in the gym and the last one out.
Oh, I like
those guys.
He's
in there for you know, getting up thousands of shots. They have to, like, you know, turn out the lights to drive him out of there.
That should be a website where every team lists who first one in the gym, last one to leave is for the team. Stuff I'd want to know.
It's good information. Yep. So, yeah.
So he's the first one to get to the gym on the Wizards?
So they say. That's what the stories
are. Okay, Verno. I think he's going to score lots of points.
Me too. I agree with that.
I don't know if your team's going to win games, but I think they're going to win 22.
It's an over for me this year.
Oh, my God.
22 All right. games.
All right. That's more appalling than my over.
No, it's not. They yes, went right is. Around 19 or 20 last year. We're only asking to win two or three more.
You had Jordan Poole.
House enjoyed Jordan
Poole. Is that a good thing?
House wished him his best when he left.
I sure did. CJ McCollum and Chris Middleton are on this team for at least the first 2 months.
I forgot. House,
what's
that.
Your number one thing you're most excited about this season, non-Wizards related? Do you have that?
Oh, yeah. At the top of your head? No joke. All BS aside, it's Denver. It's seeing Denver. It's seeing the Joker finally with the thing that everybody's been begging Denver to do. They finally figured it out. They finally put somebody in charge. Kroenke stepped up like, okay, I'll be the guy. We're not going to keep having the coach in the front office, you know, fighting over the direction of the team. And now they have a full complement. So we're just knocking on wood for good health over the course of the season for Denver, because that should be an awesome fucking basketball team in the West with a West that is an awesome fucking Western Conference. So let's go.
I agree. They could have very easily tried to just keep it going, right? Like, oh, we lost in game 7 and Aaron Gordon got hurt and this happened. Instead, they remade it. They remade the team.
They didn't even spend that much money. They're still under the aprons and stuff. They still have a little room to do even more.
But we see this every year. Teams just stick with it and then they make excuses for why they lost. Instead of saying, okay, we need to go a different route in order to get where we want to go. It's not good enough. And they looked at it and said, it's not good enough. So I give them credit. Like, this is A+. What you're supposed to do when you've got a generational player.
Yes, exactly.
Denver was my number one, closely followed by number two, the Celtics just rolling out five white guys.
Unbelievable.
White guys just unabashedly jacking up threes. People are going to think they're at a YMCA. It's like, I thought I was in an NBA game. I'm watching five white guys jacking up threes. What happened?
I don't think it works in 2025.
Probably not. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to do Ringer 107, the real reason we brought Verno on. All right, Verno.
Yep.
House and I are 10 and 15 in this Ringer 107 contest.
Let's think.
In 7 of those picks, we thought we had the game. We blew a lead, and the other team won on a fourth quarter come from behind drive. We have not had that happen for us yet this season, but we're 7 times it's happened the other way. Most recently, Week 5, Jags 31, Kansas City 28. We had the Chiefs. That game was 14-0 with the Chiefs about to score again. Bucks 38, Seahawks 35, and then Broncos 18, Eagles 17. This all started in Week 1 when we had the Ravens, and I texted House, all right, we're going to go to our way to 3-2 or 4-1, whatever. And then that apocalypse happened. And we just had to change our juju, so we invited you on. You're more of a degenerate gambler than I think either of us are.
At least equal. He's an equal.
At least degenerate. Equal. Yeah, he's you're at least a kindred spirit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to walk through some picks. I asked you to bring a pick.
Yep.
I'm going to rip through. First of all, the games we're staying away from, unless you guys vehemently object. The London game, I'm not doing that again. Broncos, Jets. Just no more 9:30 a.m. PT. I'm out.
Hey,
just can't win them.
It's my game.
Oh, that's your game. All right. We'll come back.
Wow.
We'll come back to it.
Yeah,
we'll come back to it.
Love it. Verno.
You have to come back to it.
The Ravens kitchen sink versus the Rams game. I don't want either way. I'm out.
No.
I'd stay away.
No. Totally fine.
Line's too high. Dolphins, Chargers. the Chargers can't block anymore. They've lost their offensive line and seem like they're cratering. And then the Dolphins, if they lose this game, Mike McDaniel is going to get fired. I would just rather stay away. I don't know what's going to happen in that game. Titans, Raiders, stay away. Packers, 19 minus 14 and a half against the Bengals, stay away. I had a couple maybes. I'm willing to be talked out of any of these. Seahawks, plus 1.5 at Jacksonville. Jacksonville coming off the biggest win they've had all decade. And the reason it was, I kind of was leaning Seahawks, but the defense, I don't know who's playing for Seattle. Did you have this one marked, House?
I considered strongly trying to make the case for Seattle.
Yeah, can't get
that
there.
Secondary, the secondary thing, because indeed, you know, it's right to be skeptical of Jacksonville. The history of Trevor Lawrence and this Jacksonville Jaguars team tells us don't let them get too full in themselves.
Right. They line you up to then kick you in the nuts. There's some good stats for Seattle where they're fifth in the pass. Jacksonville's defense is 27th against the pass. They're third in the run. Seattle's defense is fifth against the pass. I'm just staying away. Berno, you agree that's stay away, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Niners, Bucks. Now this is Mac Jones. Niners plus 3 over the Bucks.
That just feels like Bucks are nothing. There's no way I'd touch the 49ers with all those injuries.
Also feels like it's a classic whoever has the ball with 3 minutes left. I don't want any part of it. Tampa have, with no real wins this year, they've lost once and they've had 4 games that could have gone either way. They still haven't like had a convincing win. Staying away all the way around. Bears, Washington House. Bears plus 4.5. It's the Hail Mary game rematch. There's some good stats in the Washington favor. Did you have this marked?
I didn't have it marked, but if you had come in prepared to make the case, I have lots of good Washington angles to support it. I certainly would not endorse Chicago and the points, even though they're coming off of a bye. I don't care. I don't think they're very good. I don't think their defense is very good. And yeah. Caleb's wearing a knee brace. The thing that is underrated about Washington, they have a pass rush. They are in. If you look at the numbers inside the trenches, they're good at stopping the run, and they are putting pressure on. They had 5 sacks. Now, you can say whatever you want about the Chargers and all the injuries to the offensive line. They were at home. They knew about the injuries. They couldn't do anything about the Washington pass rush. Nobody's saying, oh, coming into this season, let's look at the Washington pass rush, right?
Well, so. You also are first running the ball. Chicago's 31st.
Bill!
Yeah?
That's him.
No.
It's Bill.
That's the guy.
Oh, they're Bill. Our guy, Bill.
The guy that went crazy when Tom Brady Bill. Interviewed him after the game. He almost started crying after the game. He was so excited to talk to Tom Brady.
You can blame him. So handsome, Tom Brady.
This is a maybe that almost became a possible for me. And I'm happy to be talked into it as one of the 5 picks. The Cleveland Browns, plus 5.5 in Pittsburgh.
No chance.
It's a...
Dylan Gabriel?
Well, that's what I marked down right underneath it. Rookie QB on the road, 3 question marks.
Yeah.
That's why not to do it.
It's a never happened in history spot for the Browns. It's their 3rd straight road game. They're coming back off of an international game. They did not take a break, and the Steelers are coming off their bye. This has never happened before in the history of the league. And so the play to me, if you want to have anything to do with this game, just play Pittsburgh on the money line.
No.
It's a money line play.
Not doing that.
It's fine. You don't have to.
I'm tired of losing money on Pittsburgh, marking that out. All right, sure. We'll go to the probables. So make your London game case, Verno. Okay. Let's hear it.
All right, so here's my case. Number one, I think the Broncos are going to kill the Jets. All right? The line is what, 7.5?
6.5. Right now?
We settled at 6.5. Wow.
Oh, God. I mean, that's...
Neutral field, London.
A gift. An absolute gift. Look, I am a Cowboys fan, so I settled in and watched the entire game last week.
Yeah.
That Jets team is the worst team in the league. You go look at the score.
There's some competition.
That, That game was 30-3. My team can't sack anybody, and they were on Fields' ass the entire game. Denver is going to maul him. Denver is a fantastic team that has tricked people by this record. They should be 4-1, and people would think about them differently. I said this to House
last week, and he talked me out of it, made us take the fucking Eagles.
They got the leverage thing against the Colts, which is the worst call of the entire NFL season.
It is true.
The leverage call at the end. So that's 4-1. The guy missed the kick right before that. So that would be 4-1. And look at their loss. It's not a bad, the two losses are like
the
super
Chargers
close
where
losses.
Herbert made two crazy, awesome throws.
Crazy.
To beat
them. I think the Broncos are better than their record shows. And I think the Jets are absolutely abominable. And I'm just going to give you, I know you want to stay away from international games. In international games, if you just blindfolded took heavy favorites in these games, a lot of the games are, they don't feature a heavy favorite, right? It'll be like the Jaguars versus somebody and it's a four. In all of the games, there's been 15 times that an international game has posted a line 6 or above. The favorite has covered that line. It's 12-3. So if they post it where somebody is supposed to win by a touchdown, I mean, 12 out of the 15 times that has happened. So when I know those are the numbers and that typically the big favorites do perform extremely well in the international games, and I already thought on the front end, oh my God. I have a realistic approach to what my team is Dallas. They're okay. They're fine. Their offense is good. Their defense stinks. Their defense looked like freaking doomsday against this Jets team. They can't block anybody. You don't even know the guys that were getting sacks. My son is looking them up on Wikipedia. Like, where did he come from? And so I already had it in my mind. Oh God. I think Denver is way better than Dallas. So I think they are going to maul them. And so this one is, this is an easy one, which I know is a famous last words in the NFL. I think the Jets are horrendous, like truly horrendous.
Well, we have, Denver's got like a top four running attack. Jets are like 27th against the run. There's all these good offensive protection stats for the Denver offensive line, and the Jets can't rush the passer. House, this is where you mentioned that the longer a team stays winless, the stupider it is to bet against them.
Yeah, and part of the thing that concerns me, here are the concerns. The Jets have zero forced turnovers. They have no interceptions and no recovered fumbles.
So they do. London games always have turnovers.
The other thing that scares me is that big of a number when the total is low. The total is 43.5. You need to win by a touchdown in a game that's not expecting many points. Now, I don't have any problem with the idea of Denver winning the football game, but the Jets keep beating themselves by beating themselves. They don't force any turnovers. They commit a shit ton of penalties. They are undisciplined. They make bad mistakes on special teams. But the penalties and the special teams things, if they get it right one week, somehow, if you look at the success rates for the Jets, they are a top 10 team by the success measurement on both sides
of
the ball.
Comes with like I'm they're doing their best you. Work when they're down 20 in the last hour of the game.
No, it's two things. Their first two drives of every game have been outstanding. They have a script for the first two drives, the Jets. And then to your point, which is very astute, at the end of games, they just rack up all this efficiency because they're
well,
not
Verno, you
reach.
Watch that game. Like when Hall fumbled, all of a sudden the game was over. Like it, all of a sudden the Cowboys had scored a bunch of points, right? And then it was I can take this off the multi-view.
And keep in mind, let me just give a little point of reference here. Dallas had four offensive linemen out. Four.
Right.
There's only five on the offensive line. Four of them were out.
It didn't even matter.
Their best player is CeeDee Lamb. He was out. Maybe their second best weapon is Kevontae Turpin. He was out.
And Micah Parsons was out because they fucking traded him.
And they were up 30-3.
That is crazy.
Let me ask
Come
this.
Come on.
Let me ask
well, this. I have no respect for that.
House, one more thing on this.
Go ahead.
Fields 0-26 when the other team scores 21 points. Can the Broncos just get the 21 points? Because we could also money line parlay them with somebody else.
Yeah, so I am willing to play Denver on the money line. What do you think about the fact that the look-ahead line, the line this summer was 6.5, and we're saying that this game right now, having seen, you know, five weeks of football, is also just right there at 6.5?
There's two things to that. One is, as Verno pointed out so eloquently, Denver is still underrated. It's a 3-2 team that should be like 4.5 if you're going to redo the record. And then the Jets, these dumb metrics make it seem like they're better than they are. I think the Jets are also terrible. I like that pick, Verna. We're going to add it to the pile.
I mean, if I talked you into getting a London game, because look, that way you're either like I'm just super ready, happy listen, by the time the other game comes.
House and I are going to be together on Sunday. We can watch this pick be terrible together.
So I happen to be in Arizona on Sunday when the game starts. I mean, I don't know how you, this is unbelievable. I woke up because of my body clock. I woke up at 6:25 and 5 minutes later, the freaking football game started. I was like, people watch football at 6:30 out here? This is crazy.
I put it on. I woke up and put it on in my bedroom. And I was like, I thought I would get away with watching the first quarter. And my wife was like, get that off. It's like, what was that? To wake up, go downstairs.
Oh, she was talking about the TV.
Yeah.
Okay.
House, what's your favorite pick this week?
Hold on. Let me look real quick.
One that we didn't mention.
Chiefs.
Okay.
Going back to the Chiefs.
House, I changed our tactics this week. I didn't text you any picks.
True story, you did not.
And I kept there was five that I liked. The top one on the list was Chiefs -2.5 against the Lions.
Great.
This is like a miracle. This line. First of all, Verno, are the Chiefs really going to go 2-4? Would the league ever let that happen in a million years? No. KC Jags wasn't the dumbest loss of the season, but it was in the top three. What an insane loss.
The guy fell down.
Guy fell down on the game-winning touchdown. Mahomes threw a 99-yard pick six on a throw that, I don't know, 5 QBs in the league would be stupid enough to make. He got completely rope-a-dope by the Jags linebacker. I'm going to make a prediction, guys. I think KC will be 6-3 heading into week 11 at Denver. I don't think they lose again.
I mean, Detroit has done nothing wrong since that first game.
All right,
I got it.
They beat Chicago. They beat the zombie Ravens. They beat Cleveland, a team that immediately traded the quarterback who started the game. To the next team, they beat Cincy, who traded for the shitty quarterback that started the Cleveland game. So those are their four wins.
I got it. But that at Ravens was, come on, that's a great
one. It was impressive. They had a good defensive game plan. They had a nice spy on Lamar, and it was very effective.
And the Ravens defense is terrible. Lions have a bunch of OL and DB injuries. And then the secondary,
that's the part that secondary is in like
bad shape.
Yeah. Well, it's like Mahomes, I mean, good under a field goal.
Right. Yeah. Do you know what that against the spread record is? I'll tell you if you don't know.
At home?
Yeah. No, just in general.
Oh, what is it? What is
any Mahomes at less than a field goal, 19-3 against the spread.
Wow.
Oh my God.
And the Lions have this game this week and then Tampa the next week. And then they go Mini and Washington and Philly. We're going to find out if the Lions are actually what's going on with them. All right. So I like the Chiefs. The next one I like, ironically, because Verno already half made the case about how bad the Cowboys were and the Jets lost to them. So that means they must be really, really bad. I don't think the Cowboys are very good, even though I think the quarterback's been good this year. Panthers +3.
Oh, come on.
Panthers +3.
Panthers?
Panthers +3 against Dallas. Chris Vernon. Panthers frisky at home for almost the last year.
Rico Dowdle revenge.
Well, I didn't even think of that. It could be a little Rico Dowdle revenge.
He had 200 yards last week, I saw.
last five home games last year for Carolina, they went 2-3, but they covered four of them, including against KC and Tampa. They're 2-0 at home this year. It's going to be 75 degrees and balmy in Carolina. Dallas, like, they have to play with the air conditioning on in their stupid dome. There's some fun Cowboys-Panthers history, Verno, that's not favorable to the Cowboys. And Dallas's defense is awful, and you have a shitload of injuries all over the place, including on your offensive line. I just like the spot for Carolina. I like the +3. I think it's a field goal game. I think they could win.
I bet it's a shootout.
I like that.
I think it could be.
I bet it's a shootout. And, I mean, whose offensive repertoire do you like better? So, I mean, these are the kind of games the Cowboys are going to play in, same way they did against the Giants, same way they did, you know, I mean, they can't stop anybody. That's, again, that's why the Jets are so horrible. That's the only team that they could stop somehow. So, I think if you believe in Carolina, I mean, I think I think the over-under is, yeah, it's almost 50, for God's sakes. So you're just going back and forth. Cowboys' offense is unbelievable. Their defense is terrible. That leads to these fun, you know, super high-scoring games. And you might be right. Like, I mean, it might be 38, you know, might be 38-35 somebody. But I'd imagine it turns into a shootout. That's what I'd guess.
So it was when we lines locked at, when we sent these out this morning, House, it was +3. And now it's -2.5, but we get it at +3, House.
Mm.
What's your take? Let's hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I Carolina hasn't lost at home. You know, their offense with Canales, he simplified things for Bryce Young, and we're starting to see him move out of the pocket and feel comfortable. And he's, you know, if you want to be real glass half full about it with Carolina, you'd say he's seeing the field better.
Jalen Coker might come back, but fully cross the zone.
But you guys say this like, oh, they haven't lost at home. But I mean, they played Atlanta and Miami.
Atlanta's a real football team.
Decent.
Yeah. Your team beat them by 30, Bill.
I know, but here's the thing about that game. They played really well, the Panthers, for the first quarter.
Stop.
No, listen. For the first quarter and a half of that game, they kind of controlled the game. And we were like, what's going on? And then touchdown kick return and the wheels kind of came off. They fell apart. But I don't know. I watched that Atlanta game. They killed House and I in week 3. That was our worst pick of the year. They just, you know, dominated Atlanta. I thought they were pretty good last week. So that's one. Falcons, we mentioned them. Falcons +4.5 against Buffalo. This is our last week to bet against Buffalo before they get the suspended defensive line guys back and Ed Oliver. They're 28th against the rush. The Falcons, there's some really good defensive metrics.
No, you just talked about Atlanta burning
And it's in
you.
Atlanta. And it's in Atlanta.
You can only bet Atlanta at home. You can only bet on them Atlanta on the road. That's the
not allowed to
thing.
Bet on them on the road.
I don't think you can bet Atlanta at all. Why?
House, what are your thoughts?
There's a better choice. Come on, there's better choices than Atlanta.
There's really not. It's not. It's pretty weak. Weak.
I like Atlanta. I like this spot for them. I like
you guys. You know, brought me on because you lose. Come on, I'm trying to talk you out of this.
We already gave you a pick.
I mean, you want to know why you lose? Could you pick the fucking Falcons
and
+4.5
at home?
And then you go to bed at night. They're like, oh my God, I can't believe we lost. We had the Falcons and the Panthers.
We took the Chiefs.
Stink.
We took the three-time champion Chiefs.
I got it. Just stick with the good teams. These teams stink. Carolina and Atlanta.
The problem is, who are the good teams? You tell me who the good teams are. The problem is, who are the good teams?
Yeah, because
the NFL
Chiefs
were
a good team, and then the Jacksonville went all the way down the field.
We crossed off Seahawks, Jags, Niners, Bucks.
The Bills are good.
In Washington.
The Broncos are good. The Chargers are good.
We're taking the Broncos.
The Chiefs are good.
We took two of those teams.
All right. And then obviously,
I'll say this, especially after watching the Bills pretty carefully and having been involved in a couple of their games from a gambling standpoint, they have not played a good start to finish game yet. I don't think they have like a killer weapon other than Cook, who the Patriots took out. I don't know. We'll see if the Falcons can take him out. But I don't know. The Pats were able to move the ball up and down on them. And it was a Sunday night spot with a young QB and Ramondre with like another murderous fumble in that game, and they kind of hung around. And then when they really needed to, they moved the ball on them. And I just think the Falcons are going to be able to do it at home.
All right.
I have it marked down. House, you agree? Falcons plus 4.5?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite ones. So, you know, take that.
Last one.
It's Monday Night Football, and you're going to bet Michael Penix over Josh Allen. Okay.
I mean,
it's just the number.
Is that a FanDuel alert? Do they remind us that we're about to do that?
Get the buzzer.
Well, trust me, this text, when you guys are down 14-0 5 minutes into the game, I cannot wait to fire this off. Michael Penix, you did it.
Last one is Pats Saints. A possible, on paper, a trap game for the Pats at -3.5.
Oh, don't pour about this. The Saints are pitiful.
Well, here's Kamara. Oh.
What?
I don't think they are.
Spencer Rattler.
Look at their against the spread record.
No. Oh, God.
They've only gotten blown out in one game.
Verno, they do hang around. That's why that hook is tough. Here's the thing. The Saints against Buffalo, they ran for 34 for 189, and against the Giants, 30 for 88, but they were able to kind of control the game. Against Seattle, they were 27 rushes for 79 yards. I think that's what the Pats are going to do, though. I don't think they're going to be running on the Pats. The Pats' run defense has been excellent. Like, they're fourth with rushing yards, but every team has tried to test them and nobody's been able to run on them, which means Spencer Rattler is going to have to beat them.
Yep.
And I just don't think he will.
It is in New Orleans.
The most important thing for New England is Gonzalez,
who they kind of held out of. They were a little easy with him in practice.
Hey, well, how much do Patriots fans travel? A lot?
I don't know, for a regular season game.
I will tell you this, and I don't know how big the brand got nationally.
Yeah.
But my producer here, Roser, went down. He's a 49er fan. He went down to that 49er Saints game earlier this year. He said it was 80-20 49er fans.
Wow.
In New Orleans.
I think we'll 80-20. Get some.
And so I just wonder, I wonder how many Patriots fans will be in there. Cause I mean, they're filling out a stadium up with road fans.
Well,
I don't know. It used to be you play in New Orleans and it was like, you know, obviously a very serious home field advantage. And that's just not so anymore.
Well, you can make it a weekend too. So yeah. House and I lost a bet last week because we did a parlay that included the Eagles money line. And what we should have done is made the Eagles money line Eagles plus 1.5. Because under the rules of Ringer 107, you can do a parlay up to -120. House, we can do Pats plus 1.5 for this with the Colts money line.
Fine.
And that is -120, and that could be our parlay this week.
I want to say Colts, out loud, I'm also perfectly fine with just laying it with the Colts.
Can we do this? We do this?
Well, this could be our last pick if you want to do it.
Don't rub this in, House. We can't.
What do you mean?
I mean, this has been the death of me. Me and House, in the interest of full disclosure, me and House are in a league together, a skins league, where we have to pick teams' wins and losses. Yep. So we have six teams. One of our great picks for this season was Colts losses, and it has been the bane of my existence watching every this team.
They're legitimately good out there. I mean, they should be 5-0. Or could
they're
be
gonna battle out Jacksonville for the freaking division.
Denver. It worked out.
Yeah.
They should have lost to Denver.
Yeah,
game.
You're right. They should have lost Denver. So 4-1's the red record. You're right, House. Yes. Well, the Cardinals, who had the worst loss of the year, and then their coach got fined for pushing his player on the sidelines.
P.S. And, me and House have Cardinals wins.
Yeah, that's think about that.
Why I said, as soon as you mentioned this game, I'm like, House, this is going to beat us both ways.
So, and then Kyler Murray's might be a little bit hurt, maybe. This line seems a little high to me because it's a little bit of a desperation game for Arizona coming off that awful loss to Tennessee. But I like the idea of Colts money line with the Pats plus 1.5.
Well, how did the Cardinals
that together?
How did the Cardinals respond to their coach punching one of their teammates?
It seemed like a punch. Like a hard shove, borderline, you know.
Unbelievable.
We said on the Wednesday gambling show that they need a tent on the sidelines for the coaches to take the players. the ass whipping tent.
And beat them up.
You have the blue tent for injuries. What color should the ass whipping tent be?
Like a dark purple?
The purple like a bruise.
I got to tell you guys, this was kind of interesting. This past week, I told you I was in Arizona, so we were in Phoenix, and the last time I had been in Phoenix, it was sun stuff everywhere. Everywhere. Ooh. This after they had gotten Durant, right? And it was like Durant and Booker and Beal and just like omnipresent sun stuff everywhere. This time when I went, there were Cardinals things everywhere. I thought it was so strange. I know it's football season, but again, I was there during football season the last time. Like, and people like walking around were wearing like Cardinal stuff. And like, you would go into stores and it was like Kyler Murray jerseys and Marvin Harrison Jr. jerseys and James Conner jerseys and whoever. It was just very odd. Like, I always have this keen awareness of when I go to these different cities, like, you know, how long does it take before I know that you've got a big time basketball team? And the answer was 2 seconds. And I just wonder, like, I mean, I guess Booker's the only thing left and whatever with that Suns team.
But
it is
crazy. I don't think the Suns owner has helped.
It's so crazy how much that has switched. And it's so crazy that he has turned out to be what he has been. I thought he was great on your pod. Like when he first got that job, you remember you had him on?
He was really
good.
And
I was like, man, this guy seems like the kind of owner you'd want. He's been terrible.
And then he did 29 terrible things.
And he hired their GM, who was a guy that I covered when Memphis played South Florida in the American. He got fired from Georgia Tech and South Florida. He's a college basketball coach. And he's now the GM of the Suns. It's all so strange.
So for Ringer 107, let me test drive this. We do KC minus 2.5. Panthers plus 3.
Oh, God.
Broncos minus 6.5. Falcons plus 4.5. And then a little parlay of Colts money line with Pats plus 1.5. House, does that sound in the vicinity for you? Or is there somebody else we're missing?
No, I think it's in the vicinity. I mean, I really think that the Steelers are going to take care of business against the Browns. But
I can't do it because I'm too afraid of that Browns defense. Against a team. Did you see that stat, Aaron Rodgers?
We
confirm what we talked about, where he's got the least amount of distance of every pass. It's like he averages 4 yards of distance per passes.
That's not an indictment. That's the game plan. That's how they beat Minnesota.
I get it.
Like Minnesota,
but the Browns have a good defense.
So Minnesota allegedly did as well. They couldn't put any pressure on him.
But they were missing Van Ginkle and Cashman, though.
They couldn't put any pressure on him.
Missing two, like, real guys.
It was supposed to be the Minnesota blitz that flustered Pittsburgh abroad, and it flustered nobody.
I like that, Judkins.
He did his thing.
Severno, you good with that 5?
No, but
what do you want to replace? You want to take out the Falcons and put the Steelers against the Browns?
He doesn't want the Panthers in there. I'm telling you right now, he does not.
Well, that's just because you're a Cowboys
or the
fan.
Or the Falcons. I don't want either of those teams. Those teams stink.
Listen, we gave you a pick. You should be happy pick
I'm
a Ringer 107
I'm
pick.
I'm in. Hey, look, my whole reputation rides on the Broncos.
This is really, you get to come back again if you do it.
Yeah. I promise you, bring me back next week and I'll pick against the Jets. I'm riding this thing. They are awful.
Today's Ringer 107 is brought to you by FanDuel. And here's what we're doing for week 6. We're 10-15 for the year. You know what, House? I'm okay with I just think we've had incredible bad luck. There's 7 games where a team blew it near the end and it went to the other thing. We should at least go like 2-5 in those, not 0-7.
Didn't we just discuss this when we gave the Nuggets credit for acknowledging, you know what? It's not bad luck. We've got to change
things
up.
I like our process.
Stop betting on bad teams.
There's only so many games to bet on.
Yeah, Verno, last week we lost on the Chiefs and the Eagles. Are those bad teams?
Well, the Broncos are good. Hold on.
The Seahawks a bad team? We picked them too and they lost.
It was Bo Nix on the road, Verno.
I got you, but the Broncos are good.
We were 17-3 with the alleged awesome running attack.
No.
Week 6 picks. Chiefs minus 2.5 over the Lions.
come on, Kansas City. Really, you're going to go 2-4 heading into week 7? Just take care of business. Lions are banged up on the O-line and the D-backs. Panthers +3 over Vernos Cowboys. Terrible. You tried to get us not to do this. 10 minutes before you tried to get us not to do this, you talked about how bad the Dallas Cowboys were and how many injuries they've had. Panthers at home, hot, humid. Broncos -6.5 against the Jets in London. This is Verno's pick.
Yeah, by the way, it's so unfair because, yes, I was talking about how my team's not that good, but I wasn't sitting there telling you the Panthers are. Panthers are terrible, too. Your team beat that team by 30, Bill.
It's fine.
That happened. I don't care if you say they controlled the game for the first 10 minutes. They stink.
Panthers +3. Broncos -6.5 in London. We're going back to the overseas house. Yeah. We're 0-2 in the overseas.
We're going to wake up Sunday morning and wait to, Berno, if we wake up.
Oh, man. When I tell you my ringer's off, you have no idea.
Falcons +4.5 at home against Buffalo. Berno tried to throw his body in front of this. How did I like betting the Falcons at home? We'll never bet on them on the road again, but never. At home, kind of like it. And then last but not least, a little parlay. Colts money line against Arizona, maybe not with Kyler Murray, with the Patriots, move to +1.5 in New Orleans. Room for like the stupidest loss ever, but maybe they lose by one. We have a little room. That is -120 on FanDuel. And those are going to be.
I'll tell you this. They said that Murray didn't practice yesterday, right? Isn't that right? Then it could, you got to watch out, Bill. Could be Jacoby Brissett revenge game.
I watched Jacoby last year. We're fine. Today's Ringer 107 brought to you by FanDuel. Odds subject to change. Verno.
We're fine.
The mismatch with you and Dave Jacoby twice a week.
Yep.
On the Ringer Podcast Network. Joe House, we can find you on the Ringer Gambling Show. We can find you on Fairway Rolling. And we'll find you next week because we're doing over-unders next week.
We are doing that thing.
I heard Zach Lowe saying he's going to be on there. Is that right?
Yeah, then we're going to little Zach Lowe next week.
Let's go.
Did you win or lose money on golf this year?
Lost. I mean, I think if you probably check my account, it's probably a loss. I probably lost. I don't know if I hit any of the big tournaments. I think I caught a couple of the after day two, Scottie Scheffler got good odds. Like, you know what I mean? I got, yeah. You know, I got on that streak where it was like he opened up at +150 for the tournament. And it was a lot like Tiger back in the day. And then by the time you're going into moving day, you could catch him at +400. And so I won some of those.
Do you know House won over $150,000 on Europe in the Ryder Cup?
That's not true.
All numbers approximate.
I wouldn't be sitting here.
He told me. I texted him. This is how you know we're bad. I texted him something about it. It had to do with this Skins League that we're in together.
Yeah.
And, I take that back. I texted him about the Ryder Cup. And I was like, oh, my God, what a disaster. Okay? About what it was.
Right.
And he
How's text, him feel that way?
No. He texts back about our Skins League. And it was like, yeah, we should have never taken the Cardinals or whoever we have in the thing. And I was like, I'm talking about the Ryder Cup. And he's like, I bet on Europe. I was like, you communist, what are we doing?
Just making money.
What are we doing?
Just making money, buddy.
Listen, that's unbelievable. Here to make money.
That's all.
Unbelievable.
Listen, House and I bet on the Argentina in the 2004 Olympics was our greatest one.
No regrets.
Oh.
Yeah. We were so mad at the roster and Team USA put together that we put a giant 10-1 Argentina bet on and cashed it in.
Yes, sir.
And it was beautiful. It was great.
You guys are wearing baby blue for Argentina.
It was fine.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, the real problem with the Ryder Cup, which I think we've discussed on both of our pods, House, is that Europe had most of the golfers that I like.
We really
got to work on that. Can we get some more fun American golfers, please?
A lot of American golf fans preferred the Euro personalities to the U.S. personalities. I mean, all due respect to the to the Henley family and the English family, but like Harris English and Russell Henley, not putting butts in seats. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. Not putting butts in seats.
I mean, when they were listing off, the, you know, because they got the auto qualifiers, I was watching the Golf Channel right before the, you know, that week that it was about to get going. And they were like, and here's the, you know, captain's pick. So basically like the bench for Europe. And they're like, John Rahm, Victor Hovland. I'm like, oh, my God. What is going on here?
That's right.
Like, it was just Matt Fitzpatrick. I was like, bro, it's all major winners.
That's right.
Crazy. Amazing.
Verno, great to see you. Good luck with the Grizzlies season. House, I'll see you in L.A. this weekend. Thanks for coming on, fellas.
Yep.
All right, that's it for the podcast. Thanks to Kurt Goldsberry. Thanks to House and Verno as well. Thanks to Gahau and Eduardo as always. I'm going to be off all weekend until Sunday night with the Cuz talking about week 6 NFL. And then 4 podcasts next week because we have a bunch of NBA stuff planned plus NFL. This is my favorite time of year. So enjoy the weekend. I will see you on Sunday. Must be 21 plus and present in select states for Kansas in affiliation with Kansas Star Casino or 18 plus and present in DC, Kentucky, or Wyoming. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut or mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.